Okay. Right. So we say that there's a pasuk that tells us that a man doesn't do yibum with his sister, and then with his wife's sister, and then it expands from there for other relationships, the 15 in the Mishnah. And the Gemara notes astutely that it seems that you need a pasuk to tell us that the man would not do yibum with an erva, implying that absent the verse, the textual source or reference, we would think that yibum can occur even with an erva. in consonance with the idea of an asei doche lo tase, that the positive commandment of yibum, the affirmative commandment of yibum, would override the negative precept of an inappropriate marital sexual relationship with a relative or the relative of a spouse, etc. So we want to know why is that assumption accurate? Why is that assumption correct? So we just learned from Tana Debe Rabbi Shmuel all the way through. We went through the conversation about basically the source is shatnez. Shatnez and tzitzis in proximity to one another, whether it's muchni or mufni, talked about that last time. Either way you cut it, the idea that you put tzitzis, you can make tzitzis out of shatnez, teaches us that the assay of making tzitzis is doche, the lo tase of not wearing shatnez. So we just did that in the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, and we're now on the top of Hamad Aleph, the very first words. Tinach letana de Rabbi Shmuel. So that entire extrapolation and exposition that we went through in the previous daf is how we come to a conclusion on how to explain Rabbi Shmuel. B'le Rabbanan minalahu, right? So what about the Rabbanan? Do they learn it from the same place? Spoiler alert, they do. Oh, I gave it away. But we're not going to get there for at least a daf before we get to that conclusion. But we try other sources where we see, where we think we see, or we do see, and I say that is doche the lo tase. So the second line, nafkalumi rosho. We from the fact that from the pasuk that tells us that mitzora, as part of the purification process, shaves his head. Shaves all of his... teach us anything. So we continue to Tanya Rosho. Pasuk says that the Mitzora, as part of purification, shaves his head, his entire head. Matam Lomar. Why does it tell us that? Vishenemar lo takifu et pat roshchem. Because elsewhere, in general, right, you got to keep your payas. You can't shave your head. Right? Lo takifu pat sa. You can't shave your head. Shomeani af Mitzora came. I would have assumed that applies to the Mitzora as well. Talmud Lomar, Rosho, right? Comes the pasuk that tells us, Rosho, that the Mitzora shaves his head, even though it violates the general restriction against shaving one's head. And we see that the assay that the Mitzora has, the affirmative commandment of shaving his head as part of the purification process, is Docha, pushes aside the Lotase in general of the restriction on shaving one's head. And one caveat being, because Savaraitana, Hakavat kol harosh shma hakafa, right? There's a little bit of a difference of opinion when we talk about the problem of shaving one's head. One opinion is that you can't make it, right? Like one opinion is that the problem is only if you take off payas and below, right? From the ear and below, and you shave all that area and you leave the top, right? But one opinion is if you shave the entire head, that would not violate lo takifu. Right, because the idea is the corners, right? But the other opinion, but this opinion, the opinion that we're dealing with is that there's a lo tase of shaving your entire head, which is the same procedure performed by the Mitzora. And therefore, the Mitzora, by performing the assay associated with his purification, is pushing aside as docha the lo tase, as understood by this Tana of shaving one's head. Okay, so maybe that's the source, Rosho by Mitzora. We say, no, 2, 4, 5 lines from the top, Ikal Mivrach. We're going to ask, right? There's a question on it. The problem is, Ma'la Lav Da'kafa, Shekain Lav She'ain Shavu B'Kol. The problem is we want to learn in general, across the board, that Aseh Docheh Lo Taaseh from this case of the Metzora shaving his head. The problem is the Lo Taaseh is not Shaveh B'chol. The Lo Taaseh of shaving one's head only applies to men and doesn't apply to women, and therefore it is not an ideal or even acceptable general source for Aseh Lo Docheh Lo Taaseh, which would be the basis of the understanding even by Yiba, right? So that's strong enough to reject it. We're not going to learn generally Aseh Docheh Lo Taaseh from the pasuk of Rosho, from the Metzora shaving his head. Ella, last word on the line, Atya Mizikno. We want to say, learning from the pasuk of Zikno, where we have a Kohen. So how does that help? In what way is that Aseh Docheh Lo Taaseh? Lefishin Amar Upad Zkanam Lo Yigalechu. Right? Kohen is not allowed to shave his beard. Right? Shomeani, I would have thought that just as the Pasuk says, there's an affirmative Aseh commandment for the Kohen to keep his beard. So that would apply even for the Kohen who turns into a Metzora. Even though the Kohen diagnoses Metzora, he could also become a Metzora. When he becomes a Metzora, he has to shave his, we might think he has to shave his beard. On the other hand, there's an Aseh that a Kohen maintains his beard. Tamalomar Zikano, right? Comes the Pasuk that tells, no. Even though generally there's an affirmative Aseh to keep his beard when he's a Metzora, the Aseh, even though there's generally a Lo Taaseh, Upad Zikano Lo Yigalechu, the Aseh of the Metzora shaving all his hair is Docha, the Lo Taaseh of a Kohen cutting his beard. And we say, and now we say, Vim Eino Inyan Alav Shein Shavu Bakol, Tneu Inyan Alav HaShavu Bakol. So this is a little bit, this took me a little bit of time. Although it's true that this Lav is also not Shavu Bakol, right? Because this Lav of not shaving one's beard only applies to a Kohen. Nonetheless, what the Gemara is saying, and again, you could argue with this logic, but what the Gemara is saying is that we have two instances of a lav, she'ena shavu l'kol, right, where the aseh is docheh the lo taaseh. When it came to Rosho, we say, all it can teach us is that case itself. But one of the methods of hermeneutics would be, if you have two psukim that tell us the same thing, right, in terms of the qualification of the circumstances in which the assay applies. So even though it's true that this instance of Zikano only teaches us about a Kohen, but we already learned elsewhere, right, by Rosho, that an assay is a Docheh Lo Taaseh that's not Shavu L'kol. So this second time, the Gemara wants to suggest, again, it's only for a short moment, the Gemara wants to suggest that even though this Lo Taaseh only applies to Kohanim, nonetheless, it can be a binyan av. It can teach us a general concept of Aseh Docheh Lo Taaseh, even beyond its limited applicability.
Because there are two cases?
I think it's because there are two cases, right? Because it says we don't need it to tell us where they're not Shavu L'kol because we have it by Rosho. And that's, right, if you have, that's one of the, if you look at the, I forget if it's the Shlosh Esrei Midot of Rabbi Shmuel or the 24 Midot, right, if you have a specific case, you can only learn that case. But if you have a specific case and another specific case, then the possibility exists that the other one's open to learn more broadly. I believe that's what we're saying here. Vakati Itzrich, right? We're about 10 lines from the top. Vakati Itzrich, middle of the line. This pasuk of Zikano is still necessary. In other words, it's not available for teaching us something general about Aseh Docheh Lo Taaseh. Why? Saka Daita Chamina, I might have thought without this pasuk, Shani Kohanim, that even though generally Mitzoras have to shave all their hair, including their beards, Kohanim are different. Ho'el v'riba b'hen akatuv mitzvot yeterot. Since the Torah adds, includes, obligates them in many additional mitzvot, right? So afilo lav shein shava b'chol lo dachi. So we might have thought that the that this lav is not pushed off, that the lav of not shaving one's beard would be maintained, right? So comes along the pasuk of Zekano, kamash v'lan d'dachi, right? So in other words, it's no longer available to this specific case of Zekano, Kohen shaving his beard is no longer available to teach us a general lesson about Asei Docha Lo Tase, because it's necessary because there is there's an argument to say that the Kohanim should be different. And even though regular Metzoras have to shave their beards, a Kohen may not have to. And as a result, the Pasuk has to tell us, Zekano, to tell us something specifically about the Kohen, and he's not special when it comes to shaving his beard as a Metzorah. So we no longer have the Pasuk of Zekano to be a binyanav, a general teaching that could inform us about the principle of Asei Docha Lo Tase. Ella, so we're going to try again. We're 2, 4, 6, 8 lines from the bottom. Ella Atia Mirosho. We're going back to a Dahachtana. Right? We're going back. We're going to a different pasuk of Rosho of shaving one's head, but not. We're no longer talking about the Mitzora, but we're going to see it's about the Nazir, right? Atia Mirosho Dahachtana. The Tanya Rosho. It says that he shaves his head. Ma tamalomar, why does it come? Lefish Nemar, Tar lo yarval rosho. By Nazir, it says you're not allowed to cut the hair of your head while he is a Nazir. Actually, a Nazir could be a she as well. But let's just deal with it on the male side because of the restriction of shaving one's head, right? So so we know that while a person's a Nazir, they can't cut their hair at all. Forget about shaving, they can't cut their hair. So Shamayani af Mitzora v'Nazir, Cain. I might have thought that even a Nazir who becomes a Mitzora is not allowed to cut his hair, to shave his head. Tamar Lomar, Rosho, right? So comes the Pasuk and says Rosho. So we weren't comfortable learning Asei Docha Lo Tase from the case of a regular Mitzora who shaves his head. We weren't comfortable learning it from a case of a Kohen Mitzora who shaves his beard, because in those cases it's necessary for its own sake. Now we're asking, what about a Nazir Mitzora? Can that Pasuk that tells us that he violates the Lo Tase of not cutting his hair in order to fulfill the affirmative commandment of a Mitzora shaving his head, can that be used as a general lesson, a general source for Asei Docha Lo Tase? So we say no. 6 lines from the bottom, Ikal Mifrach. No, there's a problem with that. There's a problem with using Nazir as the general rule, as the general model, example, for Asei Docha Lo Tase. Why? Mala Nazir Mitzora Shekein Yeshno B'Sheila. Right? What's unique about a Nazir is he can get out of his Lo Tase. Right? A Kohen is born into it. He can't get out of the Lo Tase of against shaving his beard. But the Nazir can he can get out of being violating the Lo Tase by Sheila. Right? He can ask to be for his Nizirut, which is a type of Neder, to be waived. Right, we know that there's a process of waiving Hatarat Nedarim. Right, a Nazir can also undergo Hatarat Nedarim and waive his status extricate himself from the status of Nazir and exempt himself from the Lo Tase of not cutting his hair. So that's not a good lesson in general. Right, maybe the fact that a Nazir can shave his head, even though he has a Lo Tase at the moment, is related to the fact that the Nazir can remove the Lo Tase through Sheila. It's not a good binyanav. It's not a good general source to learn Asei Docha Lo Tase. And we prove this. Dilo Tema Hachi, right? If you want to say that Nazir should be a general source for these types of lessons, we know that that's not the case. Hadekaimalon. We talked about Asei Docha Lo Tase, but what about De'ein Asei Docha Lo Tase V'Asei? right? Even though we're working with the premise that a positive commandment can at times be doche, can push away a negative commandment, but a positive commandment can't push away a negative commandment that has a positive commandment attached to it as well. Right, so Ligmar Minazir, right? We should have learned from Nazir, right? And the case of Nazir is what? The case of Nazir is that the case of Nazir Mitzora, right? A Nazir is a Mitzora, right? So he shaves his head, even though it violates a lo tasa, right? The negative precept against a Nazir shaving his head, shaving his hair, cutting his hair, and also a positive commandment. There's a positive commandment, there's an affirmative commandment, excuse me, that a Nazir leaves his hair long, right? We find this in other instances that a concept will be framed as both a negative commandment and a positive commandment, right? So a Nazir has to leave his hair long, and he's not allowed to cut it, right? So if he cuts it without having permission, he violates both the negative commandment against cutting, and again, and the positive, he's violated the positive commandment that was meant to allow it to stay long until the end of his Nazirut. So we learn that a positive commandment, a different positive commandment, doesn't push away a concept that has attached to it both a lo tase and an ase. The mitzora is allowed to shave his head as a nazir, mitzora nazir, even though there's a lo tase and an ase attached to his cutting of his hair. So, El Minozer, my time alo gamrinan. Why don't we learn from the case of another Mitzora, lo tase vase, right? Why don't we say that Nazir teaches it to us? Why are we saying that Nazir is the exception? Well, we know why Nazir is an exception. Why is Nazir an exception? Hachana'a, dikilamevrach shekin yeshu b'she'ela. Right, that Nazir isn't a traditional case of a lo tase vase attached to his cutting of his hair, because he could have the entire thing waived by asking out, by getting an out from his Nazirut. So Hachanami, here too. In other words, the Pasuk of Rosho by a Nazir Mitzora is not a good source to learn in general Ase docha lo tase, ikel mevrach shekein yeshno b'she'ela. Right. So on this first amud, we've explored where might the Rabbanan learn the concept in general of ase docha lo tase, right? And we suggested the case of a mitzora shaving his head against the lo tase. We said no, we said no, because that's not Shavah Bakol. It doesn't apply to women, and therefore it's not broad enough to be used as the example to teach other examples. Then we brought the case of a Kohen, a Mitzora, who shaves his beard. Maybe that should teach us that Ase Docha Lo Tase in general. And we said no, because Kohen's different. We need the Pasuk by Kohen to tell us that even though Kohen's special, he's not that special. Even though he's in generally special, he's not special enough to avoid cutting his beard when he's a mitzora. So then we bring the pasuk by a nazir mitzora that he shaves his head even though he's not supposed to cut his hair, and we say no, that a nazir is unique because a nazir can, and therefore since he's unique, we can't use that text to teach us anything more general, more broadly, because a nazir can remove himself from that status through sheila, through asking a chacham to get him out of his nether. Okay, last words on Hey and Aleph. So we tried those three, it didn't work. El Aliolam, go back to the tried and true. El Aliolam, Mikra Kama. Right, so we're going back to the original source, namely the two psukim by Shatnez and Tzitzis, right? You can make Tzitzis out of Shatnez, Ase Docha Lo Tase, right? And what's the extra pasuk? In other words, remember, you can't just say that. You need to look at the words of the text carefully, right? We did that last daf. look at the words of the text carefully, and you identify a phrase or a word that is extraneous or unnecessary or repetitive, and that's what we hang our hat on to teach us that that word in this context comes to tell us ase docha lo tase. So what is it? Where is it? Im kein lemakra tzitzit tase lecha. Gidilim lamali, right? The pasuk says gidilim tase lecha. It's a unique word. It means fringes, right? It doesn't use the more typical word like we have in Shema, tzitzit. Why does it use the word gidilim instead of tzitzit? Shema min alaf nuyeh. The word is there to allow us for an additional interpretation. As we said last time, it's open, right? It has an in, and it's open for a further elucidation. And that additional lesson is ase docha lo tase. No, so we say, but again, we're going to do what we did last time. We're going to say, no, that word is necessary. And again, just remember, if that word is necessary, then it's not open for the broader lesson of ase docha lo tase. last word on the second line. Hi, l'shiura hudata. Right? This comes to teach us the number of strings and the manner in which the strings are attached to a garment in fulfillment of tzitzit. As we learn, as the lesson goes, gedil shnayim, the word gedil means two strings. Gedilim, right, a plural of gedil is a minimum of four strings, right, arba. And what do? Ase gedil, we take the four strings and make them into gedil, right, so we fold them over. Upotleo mitocho, so we wind them and wrap them on the first part of the action. We allow them to hang loose at the bottom. When you think about tzitzis, that's what it looks like, right? You have four strings folded over, knotted together, and then towards the bottom, the last half or so, or less, hangs free as eight separate strings, right? And so we learn that from gedilim. So the word gedilim is not open for interpretation to teach us ase docha lo tase. Im kein. So we try again, right? If at first you don't succeed, keep working at it. Look for a different verse, a different part of that verse, a different word choice. Im kein. Lema kro lo tilba shatnez. Right? Let the pasuk say, don't wear shatnez. Tzemeru pishtim yachtav lamali. Right? Why does the pasuk say, lo tilbash tzemeru pishtim yachtav? Don't wear wool and linen together. Just say, don't wear shatnez. Why does it say don't wear wool and linen together? Shma mina laf nuye. We want to say that added that unique or additional words instead of shatnez, it says tsemer upishtim yachtav. That those words are open for interpretation, and that the lesson being the smichut ha-psukim, the juxtaposition of the verses by shatnez and tzitzis in tandem with these extra words that are panui to teach us ase docha lo tase. Vakati mi boile, no, those words are necessary. Six lines from the top. And therefore you can't learn ase docha lo tase from it. Why? Latokef shtei chatifot tekifot chibor, tekifa achat eno chibor. To teach the lesson, right, the words of Yachdav tells us or hints to us the lesson of how tightly knitted together must wool and linen be? What's the minimum connection necessary in order to violate shatnez? One stitch is not enough. Two stitches is enough. Where do we learn that from? We learn that from tzemer upishtim yachtav, from that phrase. So that phrase is no longer pnui. It's no longer available to teach us the broader lesson of ase docha lo tase.
Rabbi, can I ask you one question?
Sure. Two.
You don't have to wear shatnez with tzitzis.
You don't have to, yeah, but you can, right?
Right. No, I'm just saying, but it's like the nazir, there's a way out of the,
so your question is, you want to say there's a way out of wearing tzitzis with shatnez?
Yeah.
I hear that. That's a fair question. That's not, from the perspective we're dealing with at this point is that you are permitted to do so, and you fulfill the mitzvah, right? So you fulfill the asay, you fulfill the positive commandment through the lo tase, even in face of or ignoring the negative commandment of shatnez. So how does that parallel the nazir? I mean, I get what you're saying.
There's a way out of it.
There's a way out of it. Right. I think from this perspective, we're just saying, though, that there's a way that allows it. Right. On this end of things, we're just looking at the fact that it's that there's a possibility in which that happens. So therefore, it could teach us something more generally. Right. Because we just want to know that, can you ever ignore lo tase in the face of an ase? That's what we're trying to say here. And right. I mean, the fact and here, right, just to tell us that you don't have to. OK, fine. You don't have to, but you can. Since you can, that teaches us something about the nature of lo tases and the power of an ase to push off a lo tase. And what you might say is that we see the power of the ase even stronger, right? The power of the ase is that the lo tase remains, right? Shatnez is shatnez is shatnez. Tzitzis, right? I don't have to do it with shatnez. And yet I'm still allowed to do it. So it speaks of perhaps the strength of the ase doche lo tase. But I hear what you're saying. But so we want to know whether this phrase of, so we said, right, that the phrase tzemer upishtim yachdav is not extraneous, open for additional interpretation, but rather it's necessary to tell us that two stitches, putting them together, violate shatnez, one stitch does not. So in Cain, lechto rachman lo tilbash temro pishim yachdav, right? If you wanted to tell us that it needs to be sewn together with at least two stitches, just say lo tilbash temro pishim yachdav. Shatnez, but then you also have the word shatnez. Shatnez lamali, shma min alef nuye. So the additional word of shatnez comes to tell us that ase doche lo tase. Vakati mibayla, no, we need the word shatnez for something in its own to teach us something about the halacha itself. Ashe shua tavoy v'nuz. Right, you can't just lay wool on top of linen and as a violation of shatnez. Right, the what was that? It has to be connected in some way, right? Wool and linen needs to be spun together, woven together, carded together, right? Something like that. That's what we learn from the word shatnez. Some even say it's a contraction of those three words. Shua tavoy knows is the word shatnez included within it. So we need it for itself. Ela kula mishatnez nafka. Right? So we kind of give up at the end. It's kind of like, right, we try to find which word is extra, which word is open. We say no. We say, we learn all the lessons from shatnez, from the word shatnez. It's a unique word, right? It comes to tell us that the connection has to be through spinning, carding, or weaving together the wool and linen. It comes to tell us that shatnez is doche, the lo tase of, that tzitzis comes to be doche, the lo tase of shatnez. And we suggest, we're also going to say, not only does it come to teach its own halacha by tzitzis, but it can be the model, the example, the primary, the precedent, that's the word, the precedent for ase doche lo tase across the board. Right? It's kind of a very abrupt ending.
Doesn't that go against how this whole idea that you have a word or a pasuk and it's either open for interpretation or it's not? Now the Gemara is saying it's both.
So let's look at Rashi. I mean, it's a fair point. Let's see how Rashi tries to handle it. It's like it's a little more than halfway down. It's not opposite where we left off in the Gemara, but kula mishatnez nafka. It's a good question. D'ilaf nuye lechud. Because if it was just open for interpretation for one thing, nechtov lo tilbash klayim tzemer upishtim, right? It should have just said, again, right? Because there's a number of different things, right? It could say tzemer upishtim, it could say klayim, it could say shatnez, right? So we're gonna sort of extract numerous lessons from shatnez as the additional word, right? And the fact that it uses that word instead of klayim, right? We're gonna learn a couple of things. With the Avik Rachmana Balashan Shatnez Darash Bay Namiha. Right? So it's an additional word and it could have used Kilayim. So I think that's what Rashi is saying. It makes itself open for a couple of different interpretations, right? So the word The word Chardonnay is an acronym for the woven, spun, carded prohibition. The fact that it's there at all, the fact that it could have said Kilayim is understood to be to teach us Ase Docha Lo Tase. And the fact that it uses the word Chardonnay is teaching us that it is a binya, is a precedent for other cases. I don't really get the third. I don't completely understand, but that's kind of what's going on here. We are manipulating the word in a number of different ways. The way it sounds, what it could have said, the fact that it could have been left out. I think those are the three lessons that we're trying to learn from one pasuk.
Is this the conclusively only place we learn Ase Docha Lo Tase?
This is the sugya of Ase Docha Lo Tase.
It's such a powerful concept, like not Mechala Shabbos, but overriding Shabbos and other things like that.
Well, we're going to ask on what level does the Lo Tase have to be? And what we see is that even if it's a concept, in other words, what we see, for instance, by Yibum is that we're thinking that there's an assumption of Ase Docha Lo Tase, and then there's a pasuk that tells us don't go by that assumption. What we'll see is that even if we understand theoretically there's an assumption of Ase Docha Lo Tase, practically psukim or limudim are going to limit the applicability of Ase Docha Lo Tase. I agree with you that as a theoretical construct, it's a very powerful idea. It's definitely a powerful.
And it seems like they tried really hard to get to it and then couldn't. And then this is like a settle it, like Azorin was mentioning. Right. It's
well, you have to remember that we started with the assumption that the pasuk of Aleha comes to exclude Yibum from Ase Docha Lo Tase. And now we want to know where is its origin.
Right, but for Ase Docha Lo Tase in general, we have this whole discussion of trying to find a reason to do it, and everything is rejected, and then it seems to settle. And then, meanwhile, that settling is coming.
The way I understand it is that the smichud hapsukim is really the most compelling idea. But the Chazal were limited by this construct of muhti and mufni. So therefore, they wanted to figure it out in a way beyond smichud hapsukim, right? Smuchin may or may not be applicable, right? But I think the most compelling sort of objective argument is the smuchin argument. But you know, for whatever reason, the Gemara feels the need to find a source source within the text itself, and not just juxtaposed to the other pasuk. The idea of Ase Docha Lo Tase. And where does it apply, right? Is it
a big chiddush, you would think, like if you can blow a shofar on or whatever, you would think that the better thing to do is not to do it. But here we're learning that the better thing is to do something.
Right. But again, we haven't gone through all the specifics of when you would say an Ase Docha Lo Tase, right? We're going to question whether it applies to very stringent Lo Tases. Elsewhere, they talk about is it only when you passively violate the Lo Tase as opposed to actively violating the Lo Tase? Is it bevat achat as opposed to a consequence of the ase? So you know, it's the idea is a unique one. The applicability is certainly much more complicated. So once we have this shot is kula minafka ashkachan. Mishan is Nafka. Now we want to go back to, remember we said that there's Ase Docha Lo Tase Greda, right? A regular Lo Tase that the Ase can be push away. But then you have a Lo Tase that includes Kares. Are we so sure that an Ase is a Docha Lo Tase that has Kares, that has that strict and severe punishment associated with it? So we're in the last word, 11 lines from the top. Ashkechan da'ati ase v'dachi lo tase greda. So we've shown through the tzitzis shatnez paradigm that a positive commandment can push away a negative commandment, that it's a regular law, right? That lo tase sheish bokare teicha ashkechan da'dachi. The itzrich ale'le misra. right? Where do we know that an ase could theoretically push away a negative commandment that has kares, whereby you would then need a pasuk of Allah to tell us that the man doesn't do yibum with his wife's sister. Right? Maybe you learn it from Mila, right? You do Mila on Shabbos. Shabbos, violating Shabbos, is an Isser Kares, right? And we see the Asay of Mila is Doka the Lotase of Shabbos. Mila Mila, so we say, no, Mila is unique, right? Mila is like the Kohen, is like the Kohana. What do I mean by that? Mila Mila Shekein Nichrutu Aleh Shloshes Rebritot. Right? It's a very holy, special commandment that was sealed with 13 covenants. It says Bris in Breishit 13 times. So it's very special. So you can't learn anything generally from the fact that you do Bris Milah on Shabbos, because Bris Milah is very special. What about Pesach, right? If you, the assay of Pesach is Docha Shabbos, right? You bring the carbon Pesach on Shabbos. So we say, no, Mala Pesach Shekein Karis. No, carbon Pesach is unique because you're, you know, I might say you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, right? You're damned if you do, but if you offer a carbon Pesach on Shabbos, you theoretically violated Shabbos and are chai of kares. If you don't offer it, you're damned also, because the Pesach is a unique mitzvah where its non-performance, right, is liable for the punishment of kares. Right? If you can offer a carbon Pesach on Pesach and you don't, you're liable for kares. Right? You didn't do anything. Right? Sometimes not doing anything is a, you know, is just not doing something good. Sometimes not doing anything is something really bad, right? So Pesach is unique. You can't learn anything from the fact that Pesach is Docha Shabbos.
How come, going back to the Bris for a second, sorry, how come that can't be where we learn Aseh Docha Lo Taseh from?
Because there's no, you don't violate, wait, because, no, Mila, because Mila is unique. It wouldn't be a Binyana for anything else.
Oh, okay.
Right. And I thought you were going to ask, it's non-performance is also kares, but you don't violate, if you don't do mila on the eighth day, you don't get kares. It's if right. You die without mila. So, right. So that it's the special status, similar to what we said by Kohen earlier.
That has a pasuk, v'yom hashmini.
It has a pasuk, right. But we're saying that it's not helpful. Right. I think that would have been the source. That would have been the source if it was general, if it was able to be generalized. That would have been the source. That's the source that you would docha Shabbos, but it's not generalizable. That's the point. Maybe we can learn from Tamid, right? You offer a carbon Tamid even though it violates Shabbos. So we say, no, Mala Tamid Shekein Tadir. Tamid is offered regularly. I'm not exactly sure what the Gemara is getting at that. Later on, the Gemara makes the point that it's a karbon, and it's tzorach gavoah, something that's necessary for sacrificial service is allowed. Right here, what exactly the argument of tadir is, I was not sure, but it's making a point that it's unique. And in some way, it's unique, and therefore not generalizable for the general concept of aseh docheh lo taseh by kares. So the Gemara suggests mechad lo atia taiti mitarti, right? So maybe one of each individually we have a problem with these. What do we have? We have four cases: Mila Pesach, and Tamid.
What about Yom Kippur and Shabbos?
In what way does Yom Kippur violate Shabbos?
No, we fast and we hold to the laws of Yom Kippur.
Right, but our observance of Yom Kippur does not violate a negative commandment that has kares associated with it on Shabbos.
Okay.
Right. If anything, the proof would have been if Yom Kippur comes and we eat on Shabbos, right? Because if Yom Kippur is on Shabbos and we ate, then we'd say the aseh of Shabbos is docha the lotase of Yom Kippur, which we don't say. So, right, so Shabbos conforms with Yom Kippur because of the severity of the fast.
I completely agree with that one. Okay.
We had Mila, Pesach, and Tamid. So one of those doesn't work. What about a combination, a 1-2 punch of two of these? Taiti mitarti. So which two? My taiti, which two should you bring together to teach us Ase Dochalotas Evekaris. Mimila Pesach. You want to bring Mila and Pesach together to teach it? Shekain Karet. Right? No, the problem with Mila and Pesach is that now we're saying it's that both of them have an associated kares punishment for their non-performance. Mila Pesach, again, kares, right? They both have kares associated with it. And therefore, they're too narrow to teach us the broader concept that of aseh doch lo taseh for lo taseh with kares. Pesach and Tamid, you want to learn from Pesach and Tamid? No, they're also too narrow. They're too specific. Shekain tzorach gavoa, right? They are both tzorach gavoa. Mimila v'tamid, you want to learn from Mila and Tamid? No, they're unique also. Shekain yeshno lefnei hadibur, right? Mila and Tamid are unique mitzvot because they were practiced before Matan Torah. Mila, we know from Avram. Tamid, v'alivu d'mandomar, ola sheikrivu Yisrael b'midbar, ola tamid ho. There's an opinion that the karban discussed in Parshat Yitro prior to Matan Torah was in fact or b'shalach maybe, that in fact was a carbon tamid. So carbon tamid exists prior to Matan Torah. Maybe that doesn't tell us anything about the status of regular mitzvot that came after Matan Torah. When we kulanami, and really, shekein yeshlon lefnei adibor, right? Really all of them, Pesach too, right? Pesach was, carbon Pesach was, Karban Pesach was practiced before Matan Torah as well. Yes, there's something called Pesach Mitzrayim and Pesach Ledorot, but it's the same Karban Pesach. So these mitzvot are unique, either because how special they are, or how unique they are, or because they came prior to Matan Torah. Ela Itzrich, right?
Valiba.
Right. El Anstrich, Sagadaita Chamina, Taiti, Nikibit Obeim. Right? I might have thought, Anstrich here means the Pasuk of Aleha. Right? The word Aleha by Yibum. You need it to teach us that there's no Yibum, and we might have thought that there's Ase Docha Lotase, even in a case of a Lotase with Kares. Why? Right, we're five lines from the bottom. I might have thought from kibud of aim that there's the possibility of an asay being docha, even a kare slotase. Why? The Tanya yachol ye kibud of aim docha Shabbos. I might have thought kibud of aim is docha Shabbos, even Shabbos. Tamalomar ishima baviv tiro v'shabtotai shishmoru. We're familiar with this, but I'm not sure we ever thought about it the way the Gemara is asking us to think about it. Right? We're always like, if your parents tell you to do something against God, you have to listen to God, not because your parents really have to listen to God also. Right? So the Pasuk tells us that everyone has to keep Shabbos, right? Even your parents. So if your parents tell you to violate Shabbos, you're not allowed to. But what's the Gemara telling us? Why does there have to be a Pasuk? Why does the Pasuk have to come to tell us, don't violate Shabbos in the face of kibud of aim? Because absent the pasuk, we would have thought that an asay is even docha a kares lo tase. Right? The asay of kibud of aim makes you violate the negative commandment against of not doing work on Shabbos. And with just based on logic, the internal logic of the Torah, the asay of kibud of aim would be docha the lo tase of Shabbos. Comes the pasuk and tells us otherwise, right? So that's our source, right? Or at least that's what we're saying in the moment, right? Right? Kulchem chayavim bichvodi, right? The reason why you don't have to, you normally have to honor your parents. You also have to keep Shabbos. So if your parents tell you to violate Shabbos, you have to keep Shabbos because even your parents are obligated in my God's honor. My law, three lines from the bottom, the amrlei. So what exactly, so that seems clear cut, right? That the assumption prior to the pasuk is that kibud of aim would override the iser kares associated with the law of Shabbos. Not so fast. What exactly did your parents tell you to do that the pasuk comes to tell us you can't listen to in the face of a lotasa. My love, isn't it the amarle shchotli basheli? Is it not that the parent told the child, slaughter for me an animal on Shabbos, which is a Torah violation liable for kares? Or basheli, cook for me, right? Create fire, manipulate fire. There's a violation, a Torah violation of Shabbos liable for kares. Is that what the parents told this child to do? And if that's the case, with time at the Kata Rahmana et Shabto Tai Tishmaru, halav hachi dachi, right? And right, so the that assumption would be that the violation the parents want the child to do is an Isser Kares. And we would have thought that the child should violate the Isser Kares had it not been the Pasuk that tells us et Shabto Tai Tishmaru, right? And that would teach us that an Aseh, in theory, even as Docha Lotasa, that it contains within it kares. So we say no. Last word on Hey Amid Beis. We're going to finish up in a moment. Lo, right? Why? Because that's not the love. That's not the love that the parent was telling the child to violate. Love, top of 6a, love de mechamer. The love is mechamer. What's the love of mechamer? The parent told the child to violate the prohibition against leading an animal on Shabbos. The prohibition of leading an animal on Shabbos does not contain within it kares, right? So we're pushing back. We're saying, no, there was never a thought that an aseh can be docha lotasa that contains kares. The havamina that's legitimate is that absent a limud in the Torah, we might have thought that the aseh of kibud of aim is docha the lotase greda, the regular non-kares lotase of mechamer. Comes the pasuk and says, "Shabto tai tishmoru, keep my Shabbos." Even a greda lotase that doesn't is not liable for kares cannot be violated in the face of the aseh of kibud of aim. So we still don't have a source. We still don't understand really why the pasuk by Yibum has to tell us that the aseh of Yibum is not docha the lotase that contains kares of marrying an erva, because we haven't proven yet that the assumption, the hypothesis of the Torah, is that aseh is a docha even a lotase of kares. We'll stop there, but we're in the middle of the sugya, right? We still don't understand why you need the pasuk of aleha by Yibum. And is there really a havamina to suggest that an aseh, a regular aseh, a regular positive commandment, should be docha a lotase that contains liable for kares? Okay, we will we'll stop there. That seems to be a natural stopping point. Any questions? Lots of questions. No questions. Okay. But the truth is that this is unfolding with a little chazara. It kind of works. The one question that I think we all have is, how many limudim can you learn from that word shatnez? That's fair, and we can really think about that a little bit. But the back and forth seems to be true, and we have to pick up with again. The overarching question is, why does the Torah assume that, or is it true that the Torah assumes that an aseh can even be docha kares losase, which required the introduction of the limud of aleha, so that the man does not do yibum on his wife's sister? Tune in next time to find out. It won't be the conclusion, I guarantee you, but it'll be the next episode in Yevamos Daf Vav.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day and a wonderful week.
Thank you. Have a great day. Care.